atmosphere conducive for your own self-interest, because throughout the day we're engaged in activities which are a struggle. Living in the material world means struggling for happiness. And that struggle produces stress and anxiety in us, as well as some temporary feelings of yes, I'm a little happy now. But those temporary feelings that I'm a little happy are mixed with anxiety. Because you know the temporary happiness is going to fade. That's why people find intoxication to be necessary. Because supposedly takes the edge of anxiety off the so-called happiness. When they're intoxicated, they don't have to think that it's going to end. But material happiness without intoxication always has that edge to it. It's like people say, oh, this is too good to be true. And they're right. How it is that impediments are there in our life. I've been on every continent of the world, and basically I've seen the same basic problems. That when you are limited to a material conception of yourself, you create problems for yourself. Now, what do we mean by a material conception of yourself? We mean that when you identify with yourself as matter, then automatically you make the road clear for a lifetime of problems. Before we start to act, we should try to understand what is our identity. Am I matter? Am I spirit? Am I a combination of both? Because according to what you think you are, that's going to determine your goals. Now, if you never think about what you are, then you might spend a lifetime striving for the wrong thing. And that's very unfortunate. But we find most people in that category. We find most people who keep themselves either very busy are very intoxicated. And that way they don't have to think. Or both. During the week they're very busy, and on weekends they're very intoxicated. In this way they perpetually run away from having any clear thoughts about themselves. Or else sometimes they indulge in kind of cotton wool talk. At the cafe, yeah, I think we're all spiritual and everything is spiritual. I think we're just all moving towards it, whatever it is. Maybe some of you have indulged in some conversations at the cafe, you know. And, you know, whatever it is, we're part of it, and it is us, and you know. Everyone at the table is, yeah, yeah. And, you know, at the end of the discussion, you know, you kind of just tear off and flip back to your flat or something. That's the end of it all. But I'm sure that many of you have been through that and realized the futility. Because, just imagine you're sitting at an outdoor cafe, you know, it's a warm night. And you're having those kind of talks, trying to make it real compared to what. And then you see some very old persons walk by. I'm sure you've seen very old persons walk by. What is your natural tendency? What do you think when you see very old persons? Maybe 60s, 70s. Managing to walk by.
what do you usually think?
Volunteer.
Yeah, if they're less than that. Anyone else? Quite what?
Don't want to be old. Don't worry about that.
But let's say you're about 22 now. What did you think when you were 10 years old? But when you were 10 years old, you wanted to be older, didn't you? Just this. Wow, I can't wait till I'm what age, did you say? 16? Huh? What's that? Yeah, right. When you were 11, you thought, when you were 10 or 11, oh, well, I'm 16 and life will really begin. I want to be older. Now when you're 22, what do you think? You want to stay 22 forever, huh? You want to keep the same physical health while increasing in experience, right? Won't happen. You pay a price for experience in this world. Aging. When your body is young and healthy, you're foolish, right? And by the time you get so much experience, the body is breaking down. This is how the material nature plunders you. Your lifetime becomes plundered. It's like if you're walking on a dark street in Wellington. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. You can never walk alone. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. That place gets so many at the time. Yeah, you wouldn't walk around and go back to the house. Well, but if you did, you could expect you'd be plundered. So, similarly, there's something plundering our life, our lifespan. And that is time. So you want to get more experience. Price you pay for getting more experience is deterioration. When the body is young and fresh, everyone is so foolish, right? If you're someone who, you know what teenagers are like, you do a whole lot of dumb things, right? Because you don't know who you are, and you're wondering what the other teenagers are thinking of you, right? They kind of, you know, meet them, oh, you haven't done this.
You try it,
man. If you haven't, you make sure that next weekend you do it, because, you know, you got to do what everyone else is doing, or you'll be left behind, right? That's teenagers. Everyone knows teenagers. It's foolish. You hope you'll get wiser as you get older. What's the price you pay for wisdom, if you get it at all, is old age. That's why if you have any older relatives, late 50s, 60s, 70s, they always kind of look at you like, you know, you just got to go through it. They have kind of a sad look in their eyes because they know it's a very hard to combine the freshness of youth with the wisdom. It's very hard to do that. Now they know something in their old age, but they feel sad. Too late to use that wisdom to do it. In their hearts, they think, if only I knew now. If only I knew then what I know now.
would have lived my life differently. I wouldn't have spent my youth chasing so many frivolous things. So many older persons. I wouldn't have ever chased romance. I would have known there's not no such real thing as romance. It should just be a dependable relationship. I wouldn't have jettisoned so many persons. I wouldn't have given so much time to working. They all have so many regrets. And then they look at the younger persons and see how the younger persons are driven by so much passion. Father, keep a good example that he's 75. He really tried when he was a young adult. He really tried to really enjoy it. Had a subscription to Playboy magazine. You know, 30 years ago, that, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, that was considered really on the cutting edge. Now it's just a joke, you know? But, you know, back in the early 60s, you know, subscribed to Playboy magazine, and you were really cutting edge materialist. So he was like that. He subscribed to the whole hipster philosophy. Prided himself on being a lusty enjoyer. Now he's 75, and I can see the terror that he's trying to hide within himself. When you're 75, what can you do with your body to enjoy? But he subscribed wholeheartedly to the Playboy philosophy. He was very proud that every day he would have steak. Typically, you know, middle class family have steak one day. You're going to show you what you have steak every night. Steak and wine every night. And then got his first Mercedes, established himself very nicely. Got his apartment in Manhattan, New York City. Now he's 75. I can see underneath the terror that's going to become of me. What am I doing myself? He bought the dream fully. He bought into it fully. And now he's just left a shriveled hope, basically. What will this future be? Tell him. What shall we do? That's a reason to think about. What should we be striving for? What should be our goals in life? Now you think, I need a career.
What is the actual career?
Think we can make money? First, we should decide what our life is, and then we should make a living. You have to put first things first. If you try to make a living without deciding what is your life, you're not going to be very happy with yourself. You're not going to be very effective. Execution of your lifestyle. It's even very appropriate just to take, like, even a year or two off from pursuing whatever you think you're supposed to pursue, just to get a grip on yourself and try to understand what is your life. When I say this to people, sometimes they will stop.
God, it's a waste of time.
It's like they really don't even believe that they have value, you know? Take them a few years off just to deal with myself? Yes. Especially if you can do that in your early 20s to save yourself a lot of trouble. I remember when I was 22. Got to figure things out right now, otherwise I'll make the wrong move and I have to be swept away until I'm 60. I didn't know many students in high. As soon as I graduated from university, my mom said, okay, time for the job interviews. Here's your suit, here's your tie. I don't have one. Dad was getting me ready for the job interviews. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with working, but I just wasn't ready to kind of jump right into a corporate career. Yeah, I was lining up interviews for IBM, General Motors, AT&T, you know. I was like, wow, I could just be washed away for a lifetime, you know? I'm only 22. Who am I? What am I supposed to be doing? So I decided to wait until the line right here. I'm not going to make another move until I deal with myself first. That takes some courage, yes. It's not that we're so insignificant that taking 1 year or so to sort yourself out is not a worthwhile investment. It's amazing how people don't think they have any value. They don't want to think. This society, this culture, raises people not to think. If you try to think too much, you're criticized. You're just supposed to act for economic development, and then get intoxicated through high pressure. Because there's a crunch in terms of getting a job, people are willing to accept stress that they wouldn't have accepted 10 years ago. Sure, you know. I've been in New Zealand for about 10 years now. Great change I've seen in 10 years. 1993, great change. Level of stress, the breakdown of the social fabric. 10 years. Great change. Tremendous changes. No more isolation from the frantic pace of the UK or the USA. No more. You know, it's all coming here. Yeah. Constantly bombarding the people. And they're enormous. Enormous price being paid for that, for adopting that frantic life. People can't work even a 40-hour work week, that's a long time. Last year, I forget whether television channel went to Auckland Harbor, to where people were catching the boats from the city to the North Shore and what have you. And they were interviewing, who here works a 40-hour work week? Out of like 20 persons, they found two who said they worked a 40-hour week. Everybody else said, 40-hour work week? Oh, forget that, you know? The average was like 55. Some people were doing 60 because you had to do that. Otherwise, the employers, you know, they'll just tell you, hey, you go home and the job is done. Otherwise, there's somebody else. There's at least 50 people who'd want your job. I know in Christ Church, one young woman, she works for a health food store. You know, now generally, you think working for a health food store, that's kind of a nice, mellow job, you know, kind of like, you know, sell things that really help people, kind of feel natural because you're selling natural things. And I am sure you've walked into health food stores before, and you kind of, you know, it's kind of like a relaxed ambience, you know, getting the natural product. So she works for a health food store, and I remember for some years she had worked 30 hours a week, very mellow. Yeah. Her lifestyle wasn't threatened. She liked the job. Met nice people. Everything was at a, you know, nice, mellow, even pace. But then what happened? A big corporate chain bought out her health food store. And, you know, so her health food store went from being privately owned to part of some big corporation. And then, you know, the corporation had its procedures, how to whip up the sales and how to keep everybody going. And, you know, you have to have a manual for everything. You've got to do this, you've got to do that. And, you know, all the sales of each person who work at the shop are recorded and analyzed by a graph. How much are you selling? And when you sold them the organic toothpaste, did you get them to buy a natural shower brush along with it? Yeah, real high pressure. Did you introduce, you know, every customer that you dealt with, did you introduce them to the necessity for organic vitamins, always getting them to get something else? They would do a statistical analysis of each person that worked at the shop. And, you know, you've got to push more sales. So they had her now working 60 hours a week. And she couldn't say no. You know, willing to do what's necessary. That's how they put it. Not like, you know, you don't want to work more, but you're not willing to do what's necessary to make this business success. You're not identifying with the needs of this business. They put you on the defensive, you know. Well, you know, if you really feel that way, we don't want to disturb you, of course. But bear in mind that, you know, we have at least 50 applicants waiting for your job. And then he just, okay, I'll work 60 hours a week. So she's been trying to do that, but she can't handle it, you know. She's just seeing her lifestyle totally overthrown. She has no time for her Krishna conscious spiritual practices. Her marriage is on shaky ground. It's just like her whole life is falling apart because of this. This is quite a common occurrence. I know another person in Christ Church. She's an accountant. And her accounting firm hired two recent graduates from the University of Canterbury. And these graduates had the idea that, you know, we're just going to work 40 hours, you know. That's just another normal thing, you know. We come in at 9, we go home at 5.
Yeah, that's what it is.
So the chief called him in and said, hey, I don't know where you got this idea. What is the principle here? You go home when the job is done. That's how it works. That meant, you know, 7:30 early. You're being paid to get the job done. You're not being paid by the hour. So, they had to surrender to that. Otherwise, you know, there's hundreds of accountants graduating all the time. Yeah, I know another, you know, a young man in Christ Church. He's graduating in a half year or so. He's an accountant. So he applied for an accounting job at Price Waterhouse. And they told him, okay, yes, we'll accept your application, but bear in mind, we have 20 positions, and throughout New Zealand, we have got 800 applicants. This is the reality. You can just imagine the intense competition, the intense pressure people are under. I mean, you've studied the uni 3 years, you're accounting, and you've got those university debts to pay. We were just discussing in our class this morning here how another statistic that I saw was that the average New Zealand woman who goes to Polytech or to university, how many years does she take to pay back her debt? The average? I don't know. 24 years. More than double what it takes for the men. 24 years to do that? How is that for you? What's the average? So you can see such anxiety people are signing up for. Everyone's being pushed in some kind of way. You have to be productive. Even though there's not enough jobs for everyone, you have to try and be productive. We have one young man who comes here to the Gore Yoga Center. And he's been on the dole. So the dole office, of course, is always trying to get him wins, is always trying to get him to be productive. Take some courses, about getting ahead. Motivating yourself. So they got him taking a course for his economic development. They got him taking a course in Japanese puppet shows. Just do something. You know, they could write down on his file, you know, we've got him taking a course. You know, that's the whole point, you know. A Japanese puppet show, that's serious. That way they could, you know, they can justify, yes, we're getting these young men to, you know, fortify their career opportunities, fortify their employment, you know, attractiveness, you know. He's taking a course. What's the course? I don't know. Anyway, he's taking, what's the course? Japanese puppet show. Really? They just saw that he had, you know, worked for Lord of the Rings when it was being filmed here. And so they, you know, just, okay, if you work for Lord of the Rings, you must be into entertainment. So, your job future, something should happen if you take a course in, well, what the heck, Japanese puppet show. Yeah. Looks good, you know. You can justify, you know, wins can justify to their higher-ups. Yeah, we've got him studying something for, you know. He worked for Lord of the Rings. Actually, all he did for Lord of the Rings was build sets, you know. But, you know, they, you know, put that in the computer. You just put, he worked in the film industry. And they were matching him with a course that fits his propensity. That's how they phrase it all. Like, that's all a big scam. What is that course that fits his propensity? Since he worked for the film industry? Well, all he was a carpenter banging sets together. You know, but no, he worked for the film industry. And we at Wynn are arranging for him to take a course in entertainment. Japanese puppet show. So he agreed to go to the course because, you know, he has to stay on the dole. And the people in the dole office are happy because they can say to the higher-ups, yes, yes, he's taking the course. Yes, he's going to be made more viable for the job market. And this way, life goes on. People's lives are becoming wasted. Now, what are we going to do? To become Krishna conscious, to spiritualize your life, doesn't mean to stop working. But it does mean you have to really take some time to invest in yourself. You have to take some time to sort yourself out and be honest. Can I keep up my current pace and really deal with myself? It's hard for many people to be honest about that. They fear, they start, I've seen people start to shake, like, I don't want to face this issue so much because I've taken so long to build up my life to its current feverish pace. And if I just pause for a moment and start thinking too deeply, everything just may come crashing down on me. People start to really quake, It's hard. Perhaps to, after you've been whipped so much into a frenzy to advance your career, that's the main thing, and then someone's telling you, by the way, it's not the main thing, and maybe you should figure out who you are before you join the rat race.
For some people, they really get quite upset by hearing such things.
So, it's different for everyone. I just got an email today from one young lady, 24, in Invercargill. Two young people are starting to go down to Invercargill because you think go to school there for free or something like that.
Yeah.
So, she's only 24, she's from Auckland, but she has already spent like 5 years in the corporate world. And on the verge of just falling apart. So she went to Invercargill to go to Polytechnia or something to study something, to change her career or something like that. And she was feeling totally lost because even though she felt abused in the corporate world, now she stepped out of it. She didn't have any direction of her own. She was asking for help. And being lost without any direction, and you're in Invercargill, what else is there to do except get intoxicated? So, that's what she got into, I guess the adults of Invercargill drink a lot, and the young people, they smoke a lot. But intoxication is the main diet. So, the corporate world did structure her, but it was killing her, even though it gave her a structure, because she felt her spirit was drying up. And she goes to Invercargill from Auckland, and goes to Polytech, takes something. And she didn't have the material goals anymore, but she didn't have any spiritual goals either. So, intoxication filled the void. And she wrote, she said, I don't even get any pleasure from the intoxication. I just do it. And she was saying, please, I hope this letter isn't foolish. I don't want to go on because I'll sound even more foolish. I wrote back that, no, this letter is very intelligent. You're actually seeing what the effects are of living in a materialistic culture, materialistic society. It's a very intelligent letter, very well expressed. You're seeing the reality. It takes many births and deaths to come to these kind of realizations. For many people, it takes more than one birth, more than one lifetime to get to this point. Maybe you can see that in very old people. They've dedicated their life to material goals. Perhaps if they're very old, they still have a little bit of a New Zealand thin layer of religiosity, spread on top of their life, which is totally gone now. So, they've dedicated their life to materialistic goals. They're worn out. But it doesn't mean they're looking for any alternatives. They're just basically waiting for death to come. So you can see, well, things didn't click for them in this lifetime. Maybe the next lifetime, or maybe the lifetime after that. So I wrote this girl, young lady, that, no, your letter's not foolish. It takes many lifetimes for people to come to this point of material exhaustion. What am I doing? What's the point of all this? If I drop the passionate rat race, then I get into an ignorance, the intoxication. It's like I've traded one poison for another. What am I going to do? So I congratulated her on her honesty. And of course I offered help using spiritual techniques to adjust her life. Now, what about us here? My question would be, how much do we really believe in the value of our life that we're willing to do for ourselves what we know is necessary for advancing our real purposes? How much do we really believe in ourselves? Or are we just kind of kidding ourselves? How much do we believe in ourselves enough to embrace decisions that are necessary for fulfilling our real purposes in life? That each individual has to ask himself or herself. How much do you really care for yourself? I find in my trips around the world, whether it's London or Moscow or Los Angeles, it's very difficult these days to get people to care for themselves. They don't have the time. When they're not working their 60-hour work week, they're watching television or at the cinema. No one has any time to deal with themselves. That luxury has been taken away. There's only so many hours in the day, you know? When you take the time that you're working, that you're watching television, and that you're shopping, there's not much left in the week. So people are feeling enormous pressure on their personal relationships. They don't have time for themselves, what to speak of anybody else. And therefore, personal relationships are very fragile. Like, how am I going to have time for you? I don't have time for me. Everything becomes very frantic and mechanical and superficial. Like, I know my brother and sister-in-law, they're both high-powered corporate lawyers. And in New York City, Harvard Law graduates. And if it's early, they'll be home at 7:30. They'll leave 8:30. So they have a deal between them that whoever is the, you know, because all domestic chores are shared equally, gender specific. So the deal is whoever comes home and is the least tired, that's the person who cooks. And what do you think happens? Right. They just get out the credit card and go out somewhere to eat every night because, you know, they're just too exhausted. But they've accepted that this is the kind of life you want to live. You want a condominium. You want a Mercedes. How did my brother get his Mercedes? He comes from a kind of traditional family where children are valued. So he wanted children. But his wife adamantly didn't want children. What about my career? I'm, you know, So you're a lawyer, I'm a lawyer too. You know, we're both got our jobs. If I have a child, you know, what's going to happen to my career? My brother, he really wanted a child because that's the kind of family he came from. So he was, you know, in his anxiety for a few years. But she was adamant, no way. She tried one last thing. My brother came home from work and parked in the garage with a bright red brand new Mercedes. She told him, here's your baby. So, you know, maybe you think for 9 months my brother was overjoyed, but then same reality came back. He wanted a child. So then finally she agreed. But you know, she told him, as soon as this child's born, within a few weeks that child's going in the nursery and I'm going back to work. But then, in this particular case, after she had one, she wanted another. Now she's at home being a traditional mom, and she started her own business at home. The point is that people are under such pressure that often they don't know what they want. No idea what they want. And this is the lifestyle they're going to pass on to their children. So now she has two kids. What is she preparing these kids for? What kind of lifestyle is she passing on to them? We can see that living today requires a lot of deep thought, but no one's taking the time to do that. We find that the basic skills given in the ancient Vedic literature, such as Bhagavad Gita, are very important for helping people cope now more than ever. Because if you put yourself on the spot, what am I, matter or spirit, then you're putting your whole life goals on the spot. If I am spirit, then what am I doing striving for material goals? Okay, I have to maintain the body, but that shouldn't be the main priority of my life. Economic development should not be the main priority of my life. But how do I nourish my soul? That is the concern we should have. We'll never figure out how to nourish the soul until we understand that the soul is part of the Supreme Soul. It's not that, you know, you start thinking, hey, maybe I'm not the body, maybe I'm not material, I'm a spirit soul, and that's it. No. What is the spirit soul part of? You have to understand the holistic situation. What is the spiritual whole that my individual spirit soul belongs to? Then you start getting into relationships on the spiritual platform. Just like you know about relationships on the material platform. Bodily and emotional affairs. But what about a spiritual relationship? Spiritual relationship means between the individual soul and the Supreme Soul. What about that kind of relationship? That means we need information about our existence as individual spirit soul. We need information about the existence of the Supreme Soul. Then we can start putting two and two together. So I just described to you what is bhakti yoga. The yoga of transcendental loving devotion. Also known as the yoga of divine emotion. Bhakti yoga means how to reach the perfect state of emotional exchange between the individual soul and the Supreme Soul. You can't get rid of your desire for love and affection. Instead, you have to find out what is the perfect state of love and affection. You cannot become desireless unless you become a stone. As long as you're a living entity, you have desires. Even trees have desires. They always move towards the sun. Desire is the inherent characteristic of any living. So how do you desire imperfection? You can't stop desiring. Not possible. But you can learn how to desire perfectly. That is what the yoga is about. And the modern name for bhakti yoga is Krishna consciousness. How to connect your consciousness to the Supreme Consciousness. The Supreme Consciousness, Krishna, is all attractive. Therefore, in our healthy state, we are automatically attracted to Krishna. But when there is some abnormal deviation, we don't feel that attraction or no attractiveness. We're in an artificial or polluted state. Once we cleanse our consciousness, then the natural attraction of the individual soul for Krishna is revived. Oh, any questions? Body is always changing, but the soul remains the same. Now, what is the source of the material energy and the spiritual energy? You are a combination of two things, matter and spirit. Material energy, spiritual energy. What's the source of the most? And what is your obligation to that source? If you can bring yourself to confront these themes and act upon that conversation, then you're very fortunate. It's difficult, though, because the present culture will work to prevent you from doing that. How many of you have had parents who told you, look, I don't want you doing anything until you figure out what you are? It's our family tradition that before we ask for gold, we try to understand whether we're matter or whether we're non-material. Anyone have families like that? No. Anyone have parents? Before you get your first boyfriend or girlfriend, think, are you the body or are you not? Well, just be happy, whatever, just do whatever makes you happy. Right? Just do whatever makes you happy. Try to do whatever makes you happy. How can there be true happiness when you're searching for happiness amidst the temporary? As long as it's temporary, there are going to be problems. What disturbs you is that your happiness doesn't last. That disturbs you. Of course, when you're a teenager, you don't think about that. It's all new. New sensations, new experiences, new people to be with. But as the years go by, and I see it happening at an increasingly earlier age. I've seen now when